So, on the appearance day of the Lord, it is the duty of the devotees to glorify Him, appreciate His descent in the world. Jada jada hi dharmasya. Lanir bhavati bharana. Abhyutanam dharmasya taratmanam shrijamyaham. Again and again, the Lord descends to the world when the Dharma is disturbed. Parichanaya sadhunam vinashaya chidhu svitam dharma samstarpanarthaya sambhavami juge. And to deliver the sadhus, to destroy the demons, to establish the Dharma, the Lord comes again and again. Is anthem of Hinduism and expression of Krishna. So Ramchandra is one of the most glorious avatars of the Lord, which varies, like these things you can check off very clearly how he did. Parichanaya sadhunam vinashaya chidhu svitam dharma samstarpanartha, like those three things are very, very clearly present in Ramchandra's pastime. And to the sort of the theme or the style of those pastimes is understood by one name that has been given to him as Marjada Purushottam. Marjada means like, one meaning is glory, another meaning is like dignity, going towards the idea of regulated. So, Marjada Purushottam means the Supreme Lord who comes in the mood and also for the purpose of establishing the Vedas, of establishing the rules and regulations of the Veda. Marjada means like the guidelines, the rulings of the scriptures, specifically the Vedic scriptures. So this is contrasted with Krishna sometimes, is how to understand the difference between Ram and Krishna. Krishna is described as Lila Purushottam. Ram is described as Marjada Purushottam. So Lila Purushottam means the Lord who's coming for his own play, who's coming for his own enjoyment. And Marjada Purushottam means he who's coming to establish the Vedic Dharma. That is the basic difference. Because we see Krishna, not everything he did was, you know, in line with Vedic Dharma. And sometimes this bewilders some. This bewilders some. Many. But this way we've heard Srila Govinda Maharaj speak like very simple, concise way to categorize and understand this with these two names. Marjada Purushottam, Lila Purushottam. So the whole of Ramchandra's character, pastimes, interactions are governed by this. Means the Vedas, the rules of the Vedas, the Dharma, this is like the main thing that's setting the scene for his pastime. So even in instances where love, affection, attachment was very strong, that was sometimes pushed down in preference to adhering to the Vedic Dharma or setting the proper example of adherence to Vedic Dharma. And this is contrasted with Krishna's pastimes, wherein wherever attachment and affection were very strong, then they blew right across Vedic Dharma. Jadustajam arjipatam chahitva. Right? The Vrajagopis are glorified for this phrase. Arjipatam chahitva means for rejecting. Arjapat means the path of the Aryans. It means Vedic culture, means Vedic Dharma. So the Vrajagopis, they're so glorious. They served Mukunda and they left this Vedic Dharma. that thing that all the Vedas, the Shruti Virmigya, is pursuing and glorifying. They've realized that. They've gone beyond all of those things. And therefore they are supreme. So in Krishna's pastimes, transgressing the Vedic Dharma out of devotion is heralded, is glorified, is grand. But in Ram's pastimes, such thing is absent. You will not see this. It is not present in the pastimes of Ram. The whole Leela is like riding on that track. It doesn't go off, so to speak. So, we see, early in his life when he left, what happened? And when he left, his father was distraught. His father was devastated. His father cannot live without Ram. And what happened? Ram told him, to uphold the Dharma, I will leave. And Ram left, and what happened? His father died. His father died in separation. Ram didn't come back. He knew that his father would die. But because that Leela is so much like focus upon establishing the Dharma, even the Vatsalya Ras of his father rejected, or not rejected, but like de-emphasized. So, very strong thing, right? Very strong thing. And that is a significant difference between the mood of devotion to Ram and the mood of devotion to Krishna and the followers of Mahavira. That is a very significant difference in mood. Right? There is some reason why our gurus have exclusively focused on a particular thing. There is always some significant basis for that. And in Ramachandra's pastimes, there are so many glorious things. In this lecture, Gurudev, mostly he just tells stories of different pastimes and things of Ramachandra, some very nice stories. I don't properly remember all the details, but I remember one story he tells. Like Ram, I don't even remember the details properly. The way he's born is the four brothers, they're born, and one sage gave some sweet rice to this queen, and then the sweet rice was divided, and then these four brothers, who were all Vishnu Tattva, were born. Bharat, Shatrughna, Vakkan, and Ram. They're all Vishnu Tattva. And they're born, and Ram is the oldest, and Vakkan is his younger brother. And as they're growing up together, from a young age, they exhibit something of their superhuman power and understanding and skill, etc. And at this time, in the Treta Yuga, the Yuga Dharma was what? Treta Yuga Dharma?
Fire slayer.
So many rishis, sadhus and everything, this is their main activity. Right, it's fire sacrifice. But this is the time of many demons, and when we say demon, we don't just mean like some greedy guy with a cement business who's like me and T on the street. Demon means like some like shape-shifting goblin who like flies out of trees and like eats little kids. Like, means like some really intense demon, like this type of demon. So the demons, like Rakshasas sometimes they're called, they had all kinds of supernatural powers also. And they a lot of times would disturb the fire sacrifices of the rishis and the sadhus. They would steal the ingredients, or they would disturb the atmosphere so the fire could not burn, like many different things they would do to disturb the sacrifices. And the rishis sometimes were very, you know, upset or very, I don't know, frustrated is the right word, but like, they're trying to worship and it's being thwarted, you know, and they're unhappy with that. And was it, I think it was Vishwamritra, one of those type of persons, maybe Vashishta, I can't remember, one of, I can't keep it. That type of history, I really don't know. But one of those persons, he hears something, how Dasharath, Raja Dasharath, has had four sons and they are all like very virtuous boys. And he's thinking, maybe I can bring some of these boys out to our camp and they can help protect the sacrifice from the demons. Like some demons, and maybe these boys will come scare them away. That would be nice. So this sage, he comes to Dasharath. And this time Ram and Lakshman, they're maybe 12 or 10, or I don't know, some young age. But they're just learning how to like fight and shoot arrows, and they're like gung-ho for some sparring. And since they're like right into it, you know, the excitement of just getting into using weapons and like this kind of stuff. And so the sage comes. There's these demons, you know, you need to help protect it. Like, yes, we're ready, you know, very nice. He comes to Dasharath and he says, I want to take Ram Lakshman to go and remove these demons from this area, some like rishi camp out in the rural area. And Dasharath is like, I don't want my boys to leave. I don't want you to take my boys off to some place. He's very sad, you know. He's thinking, no, I want to keep them with me. But he can't refuse the request of a sage, right? We hear in these times sages, if kings would refuse these things, they would curse them or do different things. There was, the Brahmins and Rishis had a significant amount of power within society. So Dasharath knew he couldn't reject the request of the rishi. So he agreed, okay, I'll send Ram Lakshman with you. But what he did, he tried to trick the rishi. And he sent Bharat and Shatrughna, the two younger brothers, he sent them and said, just tell them you're Ram Lakshman and go with them. And he sent the younger brothers. He wanted to keep Ram as his most dear eldest son, who he's going to make the king. He wants to keep him very close. So he sends Bharat and Shatrughna with the rishi. And the rishi is happy. He takes the boys. And then they're going out towards the camp. And then they come to the edge of the jungle. And then they, you know, the rishi says, okay, we're on our way. And in, this is out, and when we enter into this jungle, this is the real area where all the ghosts and demons and everyone is staying. So it's very dangerous. So, but you don't have to go in there and, you know, fight them directly. We just want you to come to the camp and stay there and guard them. And just seeing you, they'll run away. And you're just going to be the guard. And then he says, but there are two ways to get to the camp. One way is we go right through the middle of this jungle. And it's very dangerous. And maybe you'll really have to fight with the demons. But if we go this way, it'll only take 1 week by walking. Within 1 week, we'll reach. But if you don't want to fight the demons directly or whatever, we can walk around this big jungle and come, you know, like circum, like this way, and come to the place. But that will take 6 months. That is a 6 month hike around this big, whatever, track. So which way do you want to go? And the boys, they say, let's take the long way. We don't need to fight anyone. No problem. We're not, you know, not necessary. Let's go the long way. That'll be peaceful. And then some doubt comes into the mind of the sage. He's thinking, Ram and Lakshman, they don't want any battle at any time. They only want to walk peacefully. This is Ram and Lakshman's wish. Then he gets some doubt in his mind. This is not very unusual. Okay, that's fine, we'll go the long way, but if we're going to take that long, no problem. Let's go back, stay a little time with your father, and then we'll leave. Then we'll go back. And then the Rishi says, what is this? Why, what have you done? Something is amiss here. And then the king, he says, oh, forgive me. You know, that is Varun and Shatrughna. They are a little younger. They're a little shy. I did not want to leave my role. Please forgive my offense. Forgive my dishonesty. You take Ram Lakhan. And then the sage is happy. Then he takes Ram Lakhan, comes to the edge of the forest, and he says, okay, it takes 1 week. We'll walk through here. Any demons you see, you kill them. Yeah! And then they're into the woods. And they're in all kinds of, like, action movie type things occur. And then they come to the encampment of the sages, and then they stay there, and then they, you know, protect the sages for some time, and then they have this big, big sacrifice, and the sacrifice is very successful, and all the sages are very happy, and all the sages give blessings to Ramananda. And then they get extra powers and this type of stuff, and this way they begin to become famous. These young superhuman boys. And then around that time, they're battling all the different demons and things like that, and they oust all the demons from this whole area. They're like just killing them like ruthlessly. And then they're killing all the demons, and then finally there's one left. There's one left. And this is like a game for Ram. They're just like this. And there's one guy left, maybe Ram or Lakhan, I don't know which one, has him like on the end of his sword, like about to kill him. And then like decides as a joke, like, let's just leave this one. And he takes his sword and he throws him to South India. Throws him like 500 miles away. Okay, bam. He's gone. Like joking, like ha ha ha. Like we left one. Ha ha ha. Like we're invincible. What does it matter? And like this. Goes on. And then, during this time, you know, this is going on, and then in a nearby kingdom to this Rishi's place, is the kingdom of Janaka Raja. And he has one very, very beautiful daughter, one princess, Sita Devi. And this is the time that he's arranging for the marriage of Sita Devi. So they decide to have one, what is it called? Svayamvara or something like this. Thing. And there was one bow that was the bow of Shiva. And it was a huge bow. And this king had the bow in his kingdom, and somewhere in his palace. And so he decided, you know, only the greatest, like, topmost warrior will be able to string this bow and shoot. It's Shiva's own bow. Only some person with divine power will be able to use this bow. So, I'll just issue, you know, a public decree that any great hero, any great fighter, any great prince, king, whatever, can come here and he can try to string the bow. And if he can string the bow, he can marry my daughter. This is the king's decision. And then some time went by and no one could do it. Many people tried, nobody could do it. And after a while, the king and the family, they're realizing, maybe it's just impossible. You know, maybe Shiva's own bow, maybe there's just nobody who ever be to do it. We don't want Sita to become too old before she's married. You know, maybe we'll have to make some other arrangement. So this time, then they're deciding, okay, maybe we'll find another way to decide who will be Sita's husband. And this way some discussion was going on and some meeting was being held. And there was some, like, big gathering of many suitors, okay? And at that time, this Rishi, he hears about this whole situation, right? And he thinks, Ramchandra, he can do anything. He can string this bow, no problem, anything. So the Rishi brings Ram Lakhan to this place. And they're a little younger, like almost same age as Sita, right? Most of the Sita, they're like kings, like big guys. But none of them can string this bow. Right? And then Ram comes there and he's just looking like humbly, like seeing all this, you know, royalty and dignity and things, and he's respectfully sitting there. But we always know Balaram Lakhan, nature a little fiery, a little like proud of his brother, you know. So then he comes there, but he sees the people, they're not giving any special attention to Ram. They're thinking he's a little younger, you know, now the focus is on who will marry Sita. They're not so much paying attention. And he's looking a little mad. Hey, Ramchandra came, no one cares, what is this? And so he says, hey, I heard you want to, you know, marry your princess, and there is this great bow. Where is that bow? And they're looking at this boy, like, we don't have time for this. Like, all the greatest heroes in the world have already tried, like, you know, you're just a foolish boy. And Lakhan, hey, my brother Ramchandra is here. You do not know who is Ramchandra. And he's like, you know, fighting words, like, you know, bring it on. And then, anyhow, he, you know, makes some strong inquiry. And finally word comes to the king that one more person wants to try to string the bow. And the king at first doesn't believe. He says, come on, we've already tried so many, like, we can't just keep waiting for that. We have to get Sita married. Like, this is too much. And then Lakhan, you know, insists. And finally, like, there was a whole big situation. Many, many people for another purpose. But the bow was also there. And then finally Ramchandra comes in front of all the people and like, you know, pulls the string, and all the people are like, oh, I can't believe he's like stringing the bow. And then like, he like, opens it up, like, shows the people, like, yeah, that wasn't even hard, you know, like, you know, and everyone's like, cheering, and then he's like, and breaks it, and then the people are like, ah, and like, he broke, you know, he's like, he's more powerful than even Shiva, he broke the bow, and this way, you know, he was offered Sita, and then he returns to Ayodhya, and he's got the blessings of all the rishis. He's won the greatest princess. He's like the perfect boy. And he like comes home and his father's very proud. And he's like, yeah, everything very nice. like this. And all the people of Ayodhya, oh, they love Ram so much. They love Ram more than you can believe. Like, now our modern society's attitude towards presidents or prime ministers or kings is like, you know, so off. You know, in these days, you know, if you said anything against the king, you were killed or removed from the kingdom. But that wasn't, you know, some unhappy thing. It was like the people loved Ram so much, like. They were, I mean, if you, like, now we're so accustomed to corruption and, you know, the manipulation of the elite, the elite's manipulation of the mass and all of these type of things. But in this situation, Ramchandra, you know, he was so beloved to the people. Like, every person in the kingdom, like, woke up every morning just, like, thinking about how beautiful the prince was, and how great the kingdom was, and how glorious their country was, and their city was, and all their agriculture, and their palace, and their prince, and it was like, they were in like, the greatest place in the world. They had the most beautiful city, they had the most beautiful land, they had the most beautiful king, and they all loved each other because of that. And everyone was so proud and happy all the time. And like, we live in the best place. We have the best king. We have the best society. Yes! And nobody did anything wrong. Nobody cheated anybody. Because everybody knew that, like, just by being good, that was the most enjoyable, wonderful thing anyway. There was no, you know, it worked, so to speak. There was, and the people weren't envious, the people weren't like trying to be the next king or whatever. They just loved the king so much. And, you know, what a joyful life they had. what a joyous life, you know. And that is like some eternal lila of the Lord, you know, so his like living in his kingdom. You know, that's one eternal type of relationship. It's just like the Lord is just the king of the city. He's the king of his palace, you know, and it's just so great. It's just so great. And wherever they are, they can see the top of the place, and they're always remembering, and it's just so great. And they're just, they're fearless, you know. Anyone in the world, any demon, any other city, you know, we got Ramchandra. Nothing to worry about. No problem whatsoever. You know, we're the greatest. We're the most beautiful. We're the happiest. This is all so nice. Like this, the people, they're just full of joy. And Dasarath, everything, so much love for his son, and everyone's filled with so much optimism and joy and everything. And that is the lila of Ayodhya. But, you know, for the sake of further pastimes, some evil was introduced. Some evil term to thicken the plot. And that, we can say, that is the wills of Providence, or that is the wills of Ramchandra too. His pastimes are to teach society what is the way to follow the Dharma. You know, so he's there to, in the future, whenever obstacles to Dharma come, he has to show people how to face them, and show people how to establish Dharma over the, you know, opponents of Dharma. So there has to be some irreligion for him to face in order to show people how to face it. You know? So for that purpose, you know, by providence, some things occur. And, you know, all of these things, there's like so many details and so many different ways it's told, and I really don't know like all the proper stuff. But basically, the Dasharath had three wives, and Ramchandra was the son of one, Bharat Shatrughna, they were son of the different wives. And Ramchandra was the eldest in the system, the eldest son, he becomes the king. But the late, I don't remember her name, but who was the mother of Bharat and Shatrughna, the younger brothers, their mother was like the second or third wife, or lower, you know, like that. But she was very virtuous, very glorious, very great, and she had served the king very faithfully, very nicely, and the king was so appreciative and like heartfelt love for this queen, and he told her, you know, if you need anything I ever can especially do for you, just let me know. Like that. And one, if anyone, I don't know all the names of the bullies, but there was one person in the palace, or assistant, or maid, or something like this, who was evil, right? And she heard this statement, so she knew this queen. That, and this is the, you know, Treta Yuga, the ancient days where word is truth, and no one will ever break their word. That is like the found, you know, the four pillars of religion: truthfulness, mercy, cleanliness, and austerity. These are the four pillars of Dharma, and they're all like there. They're like really there, you know. So everyone is clean, everyone is kind, everyone is like austere, means like people aren't excessively selfishly enjoying, they're kind to others, and they're truthful. Whatever they say, that's what they do. And if they give anyone their word, they follow it. That's just like, that's just the way they are. Like, I think the only way we can relate to that is by inverse. Like, how invariably does our mind tell us to do bad things? We can just think, they have the opposite thing going on. Their mind was just somehow always keeping them good. That's the only way I can relate to something like that. I have no relation to these virtuous characters. So, this is the nature of the people. So the king, he gave his word to this wife that anything you need, whatever, anytime, just let me know, I'll do it, no problem. He, so to speak, wrote her a blank check, right? And, which is no problem. I mean, what's the problem? Like, this is a kind and honest person. This is a kind and honest person. We're all kind and honest people. All of our lives become better when we love one another. Like, just the natural way things are, you know? But this, you know, for the purpose of these pastimes, some influence came, one lady came, and she polluted the mind of the queen. And she said, you know, your son Bharat, he's younger than Ramchandra. Ramchandra will be the king. Don't you want your son to be the king? Don't you want to be the mother of the king? Then you'll be like the goddess of the kingdom. Everyone will worship you. Everyone will love you. And you'll be the center of attention. You'll have so much power, so much wealth. You'll enjoy unlimitedly. Don't you want that for yourself? Don't you want to take that? Like this, like, you know, giving the, like, polluting her with the conception of separate interest. That, you know, it's better if it's yours only. And so then, like, gradually this bad association, she's like poisoning with this bad association. And gradually she reveals some plan. You know, I heard when Dasarath promised you, you know, that anything you ever need, he'll do. So, you know, Dasarath will do anything you say, actually. So you can have anything you want. What do you really want? Don't you want your son to be the king? Like, don't you want to make Bharat the king? Dasarath will follow you. He has to. He has given you his word. You can make your son the king. You can become, you know, like this type of thing going on. So eventually her influence prevails over the mind of the queen. And the queen, and at this time it's going on, and it's close to the coronation of Ram. Coronation of Ram is coming. And all the people, there's festivals and it's excitement, and the palace is, you know, so decorated, and the streets are like very, very clean, and the people are singing and dancing, and they're so excited, and everything's like, just like, I don't know, you know, going so nicely. And then, as far as I remember, it was on the eve of the coronation, the night before, that the fancy robes have already been sewn, and the cooking has already started, and like the whole thing's like in motion. And the people, they're so happy and everything. And the night before, that queen comes to Dasarath and spoils everything. And says, you know, you have promised me, you have given me your word, you will, you know, fulfill any specific request. And so my request is that my son Bharat, he will be the king. And Dasarath, right, it's like, maybe Srila Sridhara Maharaj sort of fell from the top of a tree, like the most shocking, upsetting, you know, incongruous possible statement and news that you could ever receive has just, like, you know, come smashing across his head. Oh! Instantly he's in agony. Instantly he's so upset. He's so disturbed that this isn't happening to you. And the queen further, she said, you know, that Ram, if he stays, you know, it won't really, he won't, everyone loves Ram, like, he can't really be here, you know, if Bharat's the king. So Ram really, he needs to be outside. He needs to be gone. So it's like, not only is it like, not that Ram will be the king, but it becomes where Dasarath is facing imminent separation from Ram. So it's like, you know, not only like a great high cut, but from a great high to a great low, like, So Dhritarashtra is devastated, he's so upset, and he faints, he cries, he sends the woman out, I cannot answer you now. He's just devastated. And then some news comes to Ram, your father is ill. Your father has become ill. What happened? My father has become ill. What is the problem? And Ram immediately, very most virtuous, very great adherent to the directives of his father. And he comes to Dasaratha. And he tells, and he's, Father, what is wrong? You're so upset. You're so ill. Tell me, what is the matter? And Dasaratha, first he cannot speak. He looks at Ram, he begins to cry. He's shaking, he can't even bear to even speak these words, to even tell him what has happened. And Ram is pleading and insisting, and Ram is shocked. How can my father suddenly be so upset? What could produce such, anxiety on such a joyful occasion? And gradually, finally, after much emotional turmoil, Dasaratha, conveys the situation to Ram. And in the pranam mantra of Ramchandra, he's described as Shantamurtim. Shantamurtim means peaceful. And Śrīla Govinda Maharaj, in commenting about this line in the pranam mantra, he's commented saying, Ram was peaceful like an ocean. And maybe great happiness came to him, maybe great unhappiness came to him. Either way, he was like an ocean. It's just sort of the same. Maybe there's a storm going on, maybe there's a still day. It just remains more or less tranquil. What do you say? This is, so Śrīla Gurudev, he described Ramachandra this way, Shantamurti, from the pranam mantra. So when, Ramachandra, he's going from the greatest, joyous time to suddenly, his father is devastated and this very, very upsetting circumstances come. But he, as soon as he hears the news, he doesn't, no tear, no blink, no, he just goes in, and very coolly, very cleanly, very matter-of-factly, he says, okay, I am your son. My duty is to serve you. My duty is to, you are the king of this land, my duty is to uphold your honor. That is my duty. I am your son. I am your representative. I am your, faithful servant. Whatever is necessary for me to do to assist you as the king of this kingdom, that is my duty. And the king's honor must always be held intact. You have given your word of honor that you will fulfill the request of this wife. She is requesting this then for your honor to be, for your word of honor to hold true. It is necessary that this will happen. So for the sake of your honor, for the upholding of the dharma and truthfulness, I will accept it. I will leave this place. My brother can become the king. I accept. I want that your, honor, that the proper dharma will be maintained. So I will go. It'll take me a few minutes to pack, and I'll be gone. Like that. Like very cool. Very, very straight, no, big show of emotions, total consciousness of duty, that is the theme, right? Margin of, just, the whole thing is on what is the duty, what is the way of the Dharma, that is what we do, no internal resistance to that, internally, we know what is good for us, what is the plan, what is the program, but the mind is always wanting to go off from that. As the day goes by, it becomes time to do this, it becomes time to do that. And just to do that activity, maybe you don't object, but at any given moment, your mind may say, no, 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 right now I don't want to do it. Right now I'm busy doing this. Right now I'm not doing that. You know, the mind is resisting always the influence of the, to stay in the trap, so to speak. But Ramachandra, his consciousness, just no existence of that whatsoever. So what is the way? He's just following that. It's just like effortless. It's like the way of the Dharma. The Tao, or whatever people call it. So, just very coolly, very fluidly, he just, you know, fully accepts the situation and makes a progressive action based on it, immediately. And the king, he can't even process this either. He's just faints again, doesn't speak, just devastated by it. Just can't even anything. And maybe Lakhan was there, or maybe Lakhan heard what happened, I don't know. But anyhow, news came to Lakhan that Ram will be. Right? And Lakhan said, I'm going with you. I will go with you. You're my elder brother. It is my duty to serve my elder brother. It is my duty to serve our father. You will be in the forest. And this, it will be a 14-year period, this 14-year exile. Some ruler, I don't remember why. I don't know why. Maybe someone knows. I don't know. I don't claim to know, and I don't want to make stuff up. I will stay with you. I will protect you in the forest. I will assist you. I'll carry your stuff. We'll be together. Any problems, we can battle together. No problem. I'm your brother. I'm always by your side. I'm coming with you. And this news also came to Sita Devi. And Sita Devi said, I'm going with you. And Ram said, no. This is not a place for you. You're a princess. Your place is, you know, in the palace with these, you know, fine things. You know, the barren jungle and the austerities of leading a life of a rishi. This is not for you. But Sita says, no. My duty is to serve my husband at Patti Bhakti. Devotion to the husband. This is my dharma. You are my Bhagavan. I serve you like Bhagavan. There may be consciousness that Ram is Bhagavan, maybe there, maybe not, whatever. Either way, for Sita Devi, Ram is Bhagavan. So, Patti Bhakti. Whatever you say, whatever you do, that is the order of the Lord. And that is what I do. I don't hear the word of any other man. I don't look at the face of any other man. I don't want any other man to see my face, my beauty. My service, my everything is only for you, only for your enjoyment. I cannot live without you. How will I maintain my chastity? I am only for you. I must go with you. So Ram takes on this great difficulty for the way of the Dharma. Lakhan comes with him to uphold the Dharma. Sita Devi goes, all for the Dharma. All consciousness is on the Dharma. Right? How can we do the Dharma? That's what we're doing. How much, you know, someone may say, oh, I want to do some seva. I want to do some good activity. But if I do this activity, a certain amount of anxiety, uncertainty, or difficulty may occur. But if I do activity number B, it is far less likely that anxiety, uncertainty, and difficulty may occur. So I'll do the one that has a minimum amount of possible difficulty. Right? And someone may want to do good, want to do some religious thing, but have some calculation as to how difficult it may be. But a true virtuous person, a true idealist, no calculation. An idealist lives for the ideal. They don't live for the ideal in proportion to the obstacles that may come across in pursuing it. That is not idealism. Right? Idealism means we live for the ideal. That is the only consideration. We're living for the ideal. Did happiness come? Did sadness come? Did money come? Did we become poor? Did we become, is it hot? Is it cold? It's just not the calculation. Matra sparsha sukhanteya sitoshno sukha dukada agama kaino nitis tangsta tikra shobhara. Krishna in Gita. He told, happiness, sadness, easy times, hard times, they just come and go automatically. Just don't think about it. Just don't even care. It's not even worth focusing on. So, Ramchandra, Sita Devi, Lakam, they're just living through the Dharma. How difficult will it be? What will happen? They're leaving the kingdom, they're leaving all their security, opulence, wealth, their lifestyle, their friends, their family, their TV show, their blah blah blah, you know, like, not an adding, you know, like in our life, we have so many, we have our particular type of food that we like, we have the clothes we like, we have the luxuries we like, we have the, you know, apps on our computer we prefer, like, so many things. Okay? Now you're just walking away from all of them. What will happen? They don't know. What will happen? We don't know. Where will we stay? We don't know. Right? Some people, they'll say, oh, I want to join the temple. But tell me, when I'm there, what will be there? It will be good room, it will be good situation, temple financial basis is what? Like, they want to know so many things. And then, if there is a suitable basis, then they will invest. Then they will consider. Before I buy stock, I want to know, what is the strength of this company? Right? That is typical calculation of self-interest. Right? And people there are thinking, oh, if circumstances were better, if it wasn't so bad in this Kali Yuga, then we could easily surrender to Krishna. Then we could easily just fearlessly lead the life of the surrendered soul. But now, Kali Yuga, bank accounts, international laws, visas, so many things, it's so complicated. It just doesn't work anymore. It just doesn't work. All this Dharma, Sharanagati, that all was taught before, you know, bank accounts and credit cards and visas and airplanes and all. It just wasn't there before. Before governments, you know, had like chips inside your neck and passports and all this stuff, and you had to be dated in all these systems. That just didn't exist when all this Sharanagati was come up with. So it's just not really compatible. So, you know, we need to bow down to all these modern social laws. And sometimes we'll read Sharanagati and think how nice it would be. Isn't it? Oh, if our city weren't so expensive, then we wouldn't have to worry about that. Oh, we're suffering like this. We're suffering so much with these type of questions. You know, in India, you know, a sadhu can just live for free. You know, but in my country, you get arrested if you're caught sleeping outside, and it's just not possible to let go of all of these things. And, you know, I just need to keep staying the way I am. And it's just too reckless to risk my, you know, my, what do you call it? My, you know, I need to start building good credit early. Because if I don't start a good credit record now, in 10 years I won't be able to, you know, invest and buy a car and a house. It's just really important that I start building my proper credit record now in my 20s. You know, so I just can't process all of these things. I need to make a good foundation for my life. My parents are advising me in this way. It's very prudent, don't you think? But the ideal, so Ramchandra Lakam, they're leaving, right? They've got the biggest kingdom, they got the biggest money, they got the biggest everything, they got like every luxury and security you could possibly imagine, right? They have the most secure and, you know, like, nice situation that could ever exist. And they're walking out of that into what? You know? Into like jungles full of like blood drinking goblins and like crazy people and like all kinds of, you know, snakes and tigers and unknown wildlife. So many things, you know. Like, so much worse than anything you're gonna find in like a modern, you know, whatever. In the crude sense. Nowadays, people are afraid. No. Ultimately, it boils down to being afraid of not having money and not getting some medicine when you're sick. That's really what it boils down to, ultimately. Being afraid of that. That's all it really is. But Ramachandra, his consciousness is only through the Dharma. What does the Dharma list do that? How difficult will it be? No consideration. And he was gone. And the next morning he was gone. That morning he was going to become the king of the world. And he was gone. And now he's, you know, walking in the woods. Very serious thing. Right? The way of the world and the way of the Dharma are never the same. And the extent to which one takes shelter of the Dharma, not always, but most of the time, is more or less inverse to the extent to which one is, you know, accumulating worldly things for themselves. So 1,001 future circumstances have all been cancelled out by understanding the fearlessness of the surrendered soul, the fearlessness of a follower of the Dharma. Right? It is not like that this type of thing was based on a social circumstance. Like, oh, you know, the woods outside Ayodhya, they're clean and they're nice. So we'll stay in those woods. And it's not like they're calculating like that. It doesn't have any connection with that. You know? It's like saying any and all dangerous circumstances may happen. No problem. Right? What we need to face our life is not some, like, you know, very prudent analysis of what's going on. You know, it's very deep faith and conviction in our ideals. That is like where more and more strength comes to walk out into the unknown. It's not like trying to piece together the unknown with a bunch of like worldly calculation is what's really going to help you. Anyway, that's enough on that theme. So, Ramachandra, welcome. Sita Devi, they leave. And everyone in Ayodhya is so sad. Everyone in Ayodhya is sad. Dasarath is sad. The other queens are sad. The people are sad. They're shocked. They're confused. What happened? How could this be? And Bharat, right, who, he's so sad. He's very, ashamed of his mother. How could you do this? How could you do this? Right? We love Ramachandra so much. He is the most qualified, beautiful, perfect person ever. Like, and now you're putting me, like, you want me to, like, take his place? Like, this is the most, like, humiliating, uncomfortable situation I could ever be in. How could you do this to me? Like, you know, so Bharat, he refuses. He says, I will not become the king. You may have made this request to Dasarath, and Dasarath may have promised to fulfill your word. I have no promise to keep with you. I have no duty to usurp the throne of, you know, from Ram due to your, you know, confusion. That is not my dharma. So, he says, so by your, you know, what you've done, now Ram will be gone for 14 years. Then, Ram will become the king. Today he is coronated, today he is the king. And he will always be the king of Ayodhya. But while he is gone, to teach us what is the Dharma, then his shoes, his throne is here, everything is here, his shoes are there, holding his place. And I will act as the, you know, sovereign leader of this place, as one of those terms, like the, you know, stand in, the vice, you know, when the main person is not there. Like that, I will, because that is my duty as his brother, because Ram and Lakhan, my two elder brothers, are now gone due to you, right? Then it is my duty as a younger brother, it is the duty of the Dharma for me to, you know, uphold their duties when they're not here to do them. So for, in that sense, I will act as the king of the palace until Ram returns. But I have not one desire to, you know, become the king or anything like this. So Bharat, he becomes the king, he puts Ramachandra's shoes on the throne, and all the people enter into 14 years of separation. And they're crying, and they're sad, and they're so upset, and so many things. And this also, right, we can say from the long-term perspective, deepens their love and attachment for Ram. From separation comes increased attachment and heartfelt love for their beloved. So in this way, Ayodhya continues for 14 years, and Ramchandra, he goes about the world. And so many things happen, so many pastimes, so many stories, so much fighting, so many things. And, you know, I just will glaze over all of that and say that back when Ramchandra, when he was young, and he was at that Rishi's camp and battled all those demons and then threw one to South India, right? That demon took a grudge against Ramchandra from that time. And then there was one great demon king in South India, Ravan. And he went to Ravan and he made some plan, and they, you know, from that time, they were like plotting against Ram. So during this time, Ram is in, you know, going about the land. And this demon comes and they want to kill Ram. They want to destroy Ram. Ravan and this demon. So they're thinking, how can we do this, right? And they're thinking, you know, he's very powerful. Like, it won't be easy, and we can't just directly try to fight him. But then they make a plot, and they decide, if we can kidnap Sita, then we can draw him into our kingdom, into our place, and there we'll be able to overpower him, in the middle of where our forces are the most strong, and his forces are the weak. The weakest, there we'll be able to destroy him. So if we kidnap Sita and then bring him there, then we'll be able to destroy him. This is their plot. So this demon takes the form of a deer, and when one day Ram, Lakshman, Sita, they're living in one like cottage in the forest. And Ram goes out for the day to bring back some food. And while Ram is gone, he tells Lakshman, okay, stay here, take care of Sita, I'll be back after some time. And then the demon, from a distance where Sita and Lakshman can hear him, but he out of sight but within earshot, he makes his voice sound like Ram's voice. And he begins to cry, help, help, come, help me, like this. And they're hearing, and it sounds like Ram is calling for help. And again, he's calling, help, help, help. And Sita becomes upset, saying, Lakshman, go, he's calling for help, he's calling for help. And Lakshman is like, Ram doesn't need help, Ram is invincible. Like, what are you talking about? This isn't your womanly. You know, Ram is invincible. You think any, like, you know, tiger or whatever can mess with Ram? Like, get out of here. But help! 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 And Sita is becoming, like, upset, thinking Ram is in danger. And again, like, come on, lady. Nothing can happen to Ram. Ram is invincible. Why are you having any doubt in Ram's power? And Sita saying, but he's crying for help! He's crying for help! Lakshman says, no, that is some trick. Don't think about it. That is not Ram. Ram will never call for help in this world. Ram is just, nothing can happen to Ram. But Sita becomes very upset. And she uses her, like, lady's powers to make some, to try to influence Lakshman. And so she sees Lakshman won't go there. He won't go to help Ram. So she decides she'll have to, like, force Lakshman to go. So she says, Lakshman, if you don't go to help Ram, then I will lie, and I will tell Ram that while he was gone, you acted inappropriately with me. If you stay here, then I will tell Ram that you did some wrong with me. you better go. Otherwise, when you get back, I will tell Ram this, and Ram will, you cannot think what Ram will do to you. Like this. And then Lakhan's like, now he's a little bit in a little difficult situation. And he's thinking, oh man, you know, she's really forcing the issue here. And he's thinking, but it's impossible. It's impossible that Ram is in danger. It's impossible. This makes no sense. But then he's thinking, but even though it's impossible, and even though it makes no sense, if I don't go there, Sita may create a big problem. So, to avoid this problem, he's thinking, to avoid this problem that Sita is going to make, I will go there. Not because Ram is really in danger, but because I can deal with this, you know, elder brother's wife thing. That's just a little too much for me. So, he says, okay, Sita, stay, you know, sit down. And then he draws a line with his, I don't know, something bow in the ground. And he says, I'm using some mantra or some special power, and I'm creating like a force field around you. Okay? And if you stay inside this line that I just drew, no one will be able to harm you. Nothing can happen. Okay? Ram gave me the duty to protect you. Okay, that is my duty. That is my dharma, and I'm doing that. But you are making that so difficult for me that to appease your mind, I'm going to go there to, like, you know, calm you down. But I'm asking you, please, because I need to do my... Do not cross this line. Lakhan's request. He's, like, angry. He's very angry with Sita. Hey, look, you're making a big problem for me. This is really wrong, what you're doing. Okay? Now, I'm making this. Now don't do that. Okay? And leave. And then, when Lakhan leaves, then the demon, he takes the form of a deer. And he begins to, like, woohoo, woohoo, like, call, play upon the attachment of Sita. And this deer is there, and the deer is, like, beckoning her, and, like, trying to lure her across this line. And anyhow, eventually, she crosses the line that Lakhan drew because the deer was, like, you know, out of attachment for this deer. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she came across the line, the deer goes... and this, like, ghastly demon, and, like, flies away. However, you know, in the Kurma Puran, where this story is also told, a significant detail is present that says that because once when Mahaprabhu was in South India, he met some person, and that person was crying and fasting. And Mahaprabhu said, why are you so upset? And he says, because that demon touched Mother Sita. This is the most revolting thought. That the most holy, pure, and gentle goddess has been touched by this wicked demon. I cannot bear the thought of this. It is the most disgusting thought. I just can't eat, I can't cook, I can't deal with this. I mean, I'm just putting it in colloquial language, we didn't actually use this term. And then, fast forward, Mahaprabhu shows him in the Kurma Puran, one quote that says to the effect that you're right, it is impossible. No demon can ever, in a million, it is utterly impossible for any demon to lay his hand upon, you know, the spiritual form of Sita. What to speak of touching? She's invisible. Like, she's completely inaccessible to the entire mind and senses of a demon. But for these pastimes and so many, for another purpose, it was arranged that when Sita came out of this, across this line, Agni Dev, the fire god, he, like at that time, like this force field that Lakhan created had something to do with Agni Dev. So Agni Dev, like, took Sita and created this hologram Sita. like Maya Sita is called, or Chaya Sita. And that Sita, the demon took. That was not the real Sita. That was some like hologram magic Sita that was like duplicated for this Leela. But the real Sita will never sit in the, you know, sit under the tree in the palace of Ravana crying. Like, this will never happen. And then the Brahmin, he got so much relief, then he cooked for Mahavibhu, and then, like this, then the man, it went on. That happened in the pastimes of Mahavibhu. So, at that time, the real Sita is protected in the fire, some fire world. And this Chaya Sita goes to Lanka with the demon. And then Ram, Lakan, they come back, Sita's gone, Ram, what happened? And then anyhow, they figure it out that Sita's there, then they go to South India, then they have a big battle, then the monkeys come, and all these kind of stories, fast forward, you know, this big battle, fighting, Lakan flies with the mountain, revives Ram from dead, and then they, the son of Ravana has all these superpowers and almost kills Ram, and then they cheat, and then they kill him, like, and they break the Dharma and like hidingly kill this demon, and then they steal this, and then Lakan burns down the city, and like all this stuff happens, and they get Chaya Sita back. And then after all the big, you know, glorious things, then they return to Ayodhya. And eventually Ram, internally for the purpose of bringing back the real Sita, and externally, also, to teach the people the Dharma, he decides, I'm going to test Sita. And Sita, you were so long in the palace of Ravana, have you been chased? I don't know if you have been chased to me while you were in the palace of Ravana. So, if you can walk into, there's some idea that if a woman is truly chaste, she, some protective power is there, and she will not be burned in this fire. So you can be tested in this fire, and if you have been chased, there will be no problem. And then that Sita goes into the fire, and out of the fire comes the real Sita. And the real Sita is there. And then again, they're back in Ayodhya. Sita Ram is there, etc. And I heard maybe some, I don't know which Puran, Brahma Vaivarta Puran or some other Puran, this is like a very questionable, obscure detail, that Chaya Sita, who is she? She's also a person. And in some Puran it says that Chaya Sita, she also got a little bit of, you know, direct association with Ram. And then her heart became, you know, completely devoted to Ram by that association. And in her next birth, she became Draupadi. It is told like that in some Puran. And then she got, again, Krishna and all these things. So in this way, the pastimes of Ramchandra, all the different events that happen, come to as lessons in the Dharma. The glory of honesty, chastity, duty, like selflessly following the way, with no, you know, analysis of what, how difficult it might be along the way. Like, as Gurudev described, Shantamurti, just a peaceful person following the way. That's all it is. Just follow the way. And with the internal faith, that if you just, it's always the best. If you just follow the Dharma, it's always for the best. Maybe you can see that, maybe you can't see that, it just doesn't matter. You just, whatever you do, you just follow the way. Like this natural flow. So Ramchandra's pastimes come as this grand enlightening example for the souls of the world to see the beauty of following the Dharma. Okay, anyway, I don't know what time it is. There's so many other stories and cool, funny things and like lots of stuff like that, but I don't remember so much. And as we've heard from Srila Govinda Maharaj, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's explained that according to the time that Vishnu appears in the day, to that time, the devotees fast. So Ramchandra appeared at noontime, so the fast today is still noontime. So that way we are simple observance of Ramana, we are focused. And we are appreciating what qualities are there within these pastimes and continuing our focus on Mahaprabhu's line. Alright, any comments? Anyone? Rajanabha, if I told any details wrong or some stories bad, please correct me. Say again?
The sage went to the entire speaker and he wanted some alms.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah. But also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Bhagavan came to the temple of Vishnu, he called one name of Ram. Three names of Ram. One name of Ram. And three names of Ram are equal to one name of Krishna.
One thing I reacted on, you said, that he left Vatsalya Ras, or he like pushed down Vatsalya Ras, but is there Vatsalya Ras in this Leela?
We can say it's present in a very small form. Yes. Also Madhura, like Srila Sridhar Maharshi commented, in Ram Leela, Madhura Rasa Seva, only one has that Seva, Sita Deva, no one else. But in Krishna Leela, that type of Seva opened out to so many. That is the Lord's mercy. So in Ramchandra's Leela, there is a very small amount of Vatsalya Rasa and Madhura Rasa, like very little. And in Krishna Leela, those things were, took the front. They took center stage, so to speak, and the Dharma took the back stage. So from the... in this lecture here, Gurudev, at the end of his lecture, he talks about rasa vichar, like understanding the supremacy of the Lord's avatars on the basis of rasa. And then he explains that point, that because the Madhura Ras, Sakya Ras, Vatsalya Ras is very constricted in Ram's Leela, then it is his Leela has a little bit lower position than the pastimes of Krishna, where those rasas are in a more grand form. But his pastimes are superior to the pastimes of other forms of the Lord where the Lord just appears. He doesn't have a mother, he doesn't have a father, or he doesn't have, friends or close relatives. Ram's pastimes are above those, because they are there to a certain extent.